For being here on the top of your Gimel Amud Aleph, here the Gemara is discussing the last line in the Mishnah, which is that the Kapar Kohen Mashuach comes before the Par Eidah. The Mishnah began that Kol HaTadir Kodem, Kol HaKadosh Kodem, in Seder Kodoshim will deal with what happens if there is a competition between Tadir and Kadosh, which one takes precedence. But it seems to be they're brought in the Mishnah not because they're the reason why the last part of the Mishnah, which is relevant to our Masechta, is true, but just because these are different methods of hierarchy. The last hierarchy that's mentioned in the Mishnah is that the Par Kohen Mashiach goes before the Par Eidah, and the Gemara wants to know, Menahane Mile. Where do we know this from? So that tells you it's not from Tadir Kodem, it's not from Kadosh, but rather there's another reason, the Tan Rabbanan. The Pasuk says with regards to the Par Elam Dover Shel Tibur, Sarap Oto, Kasher Sarap et the Par Rishon, that you will burn it up like you burnt the first Par, which is the first Par mentioned in the Parshia is the Par Kohen Mashiach. And over here it's saying that you do the same thing to the Par going Gadol. And here it says, Vasala par, kasher sala par chatat, kein yaselo, v'chiper aleim akoim, v'nislach tahem. Otzi et par mechutz la machane, v'saraf oto, kasher saraf et par rishon, chatat hakahal hu. So Rashi claims that the extraneous lashon here is the fact that in the previous pasuk, in pasuk chaf, it already says, Vasala par, kasher sala par chatat, kein yaselo. It's already a statement that you do whatever you have to do with the par helm davar tzibor, like you did the par going Mashiach. Then the subsequent pasuk says, "Sarap oto kasher sarap et the par rishon." Why are you telling me that if it already told me that you do everything to the par helm davar tzibor like you do the par going Mashiach? Then the Tosfot Arosh over here says the extraneous language is the rishon. You could have just written "Sarap oto kasher sarap et par." It's already told you which par it was referencing to. Then what is the rishon? Why do you need the extra term Rishon? And that's the limur of the Gemara. Either way, there's an excess Lashon over here that the Gemara is darshaning. And it says, Ma tamalomer ha-Rishon. Why is it telling you it's the first one? She Rishon, kodem le-paraida v'chol ma'asav. The gzera da ketuv, that the Gvar Kohen Mashiach comes before the Parim Dover Shel Tzibur. The first statement of the Gemara is that it is gzera da ketuv. Then, Tamar Banan, Par Kohen Mashiach u-paraida umdim. You have these two in front of you, the par of the Kohen Gadol, the par of the Eidah, parim dover shel tzibur, par Kohen Mashiach kodem, the par Eidah b'chol ma'asav, hoel, now it gives a reason, rather than being zera takatub, u'mashiach mechaper, ve'idah mitkaperet. Because when you're talking about the Mashiach, he is the one who's going to carry out the par helem dover shel tzibur, so he is the one who's providing the kapara for the am, for the Eidah, that will be mitkaper, Ayyidei Baradav Shemitzibor. Dinu, Shekdima Mechaper, Lemitkaper. Makes sense in terms of hierarchy to take care of the one who is providing the kapara before you deal with those that are receiving the kapara. Meaning that if the Goyen Gadol is me the one who processes the Baradav Shemitzibor, and therefore he's providing the kapara, then he should clean up himself first, meaning that he should bring the par Goyen Mashiach first, be then cleared of his sin, and then proceed to take care of the Am as a whole. V'cheinu omer. Now we have a similar thing by Yom HaKippurim. Chiper ba'do, u'ba'ad beito, u'ba'ad kol kahal Yisrael. So the Kohen Gadol's avoda on Yom HaKippurim, it says first he should take care of himself, then his household, and then kol kahal Yisrael. So in that way there is a hierarchy, and that's the same reason by Yom HaKippurim that the Kohen Gadol does the vidui on his par first. He does everything for himself first, so that he cleansed his slate in order to be then be the emissary for Klal Yisrael when he's already exonerated before he provides that same kapara for Klal Yisrael. Par Elam Dova Shel Tzibur Kodem the Par Shel Ovedat Kochavim. So now the Gemara is going to go through a whole hierarchy with regards to these different korbanot. You have the Par Elam Dova Shel Tzibur goes before the Par Ovedat Kochavim. Remember, if the Tzibur through erroneous Pesach, the Rov Tzibur acts on that erroneous Pesach, then for any other mitzvah that's qualified to bring a korban, you bring a par olam davar shel tzibur. If it has to do with avodah zorah, then you bring a par le'ola and a seir le'chatat. So it's saying here that the par olam davar shel tzibur goes before the par ovedat kochavim, my taima, hai chatat v'hai ola. That's because the par olam davar shel tzibur is the chatat, whereas by the par of the ovedat kochavim, it is a par le'ola and a seir le'chatat. So chatat goes before an ola. Now the Gemara over here is going to bring proof to that, but just thematically, continuing from the previous statement, it also makes sense that the chatat would go before the olah. The chatat is an obligatory korban in general that comes to be mechaper on a sin. On the other hand, an olah is more generally, it's not always, but more generally, is a nidava, and it is a gift to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it's only appropriate that you bring the olah, the gift, after the person's been mechaper on the chatat. So it makes sense that you bring the chatat first, and then you bring the olah afterwards, because that's the voluntary offering. In these cases, it happens to be obligatory, but the olah, again, is an obligatory offering that is not necessarily associated with chet. And so you want to clear the chet before you bring the olah. So I think thematically, it also is true, based on what we said before, that over here, too, you'd want to bring the chatat before the olah. Then the Gemara brings v'tanya. V'tanya v'ikriv et asher chatat rishona. It says, with regards to the korban ule v'yoreid, there, it, you have three options as to what you can do with the korban ule v'yoreid. You can either bring a behema, or you can bring terim or b'nei yona. Because it says, im lo tegia yado deise, ve'bita shemo shachata shtei terim u'shnei b'nei yona l'ashem, echad b'chatat ve'echad ola. Or you can bring an asirit ta'ifa. With regards to the behema, or the asirit ta'ifa, over there, there's only one option. So there's no hierarchy. On the other hand, when you bring birds, there are two birds that are brought. One of them is brought as an ola, and one is brought as a chatat. In that parshia, it says, that you'll bring the one that you're going to use for the chatat first. Matam alomar. Why does it have to tell you that you have to bring the one for chatat first? If it's going to teach you that the chatat should go first, it says, then skipping a pasuk, it comes with a sheni. Yaseh ola kamishpat. That the second one you're going to bring as an olah, kamishpat. Had it just told you the second one's brought as olah, you would know that the chatat is rishona. So then why does the Torah go out of its way to tell you that it has to be rishona? Ela, zebnei av. This is a paradigm that is being established. Shei kol chataot kodmot leolot abayim imahem. That any chatat that is up against an olah, the chatat always takes precedence over the ola. So now, the kaimalon. And from here we also learn, that this hierarchy is even when you're in different categories. Here we're talking about two birds. A bird of ola, bird of chatat. And the psukim are telling you to give precedence to the bird of chatat over the bird of the ola. But for instance, in this week's parsha, Parshat Tazria, with regards to a woman who is tmeat leida, she has to bring korbanot at the end of that period of when she is tmeah leida, and then she has an option. She either brings an animal, keves ben shnato leola, uben yona utor lechatat. That's one option, is that she brings a behema, a keves, which is the olat yoledet, and then she brings a ben yona utor lechatat. She brings a bird for a chatat. If she cannot afford that, then she brings two birds, one the olah, one the chatat. So with regards to the two birds, it's clear, based on the Bnei Av, the paradigm we just established, that you bring the bird for chatat first, and the bird for olah afterwards. With regards to the behema and the chatat of the bird, there it's more difficult. You have a behema that's an olah, and then you have a bird that is a chatat. We know in terms of hierarchy, behemot go before birds, because that's where the person who can afford it brings a behema, not a bird. So over here, maybe you would think that the behema is an olah, would take precedence over the bird that is a chatat. That's what the Gemara says, that even chatat of goes before olat behema. This hierarchy of chatat before olah is irrespective of whether you're in different categories. It's always the chatat first, then the olah, and that's this week's parsha. The yoledet will bring her chatat, which is a ben yona utor, first, and then only afterwards bring her keves the olah. We have a mix between a behema and a bird. Bar uvedat kochavim. Kodem l'sir avodat kochavim. This is your question. When it comes to the avodat kochavim, you have a par le'ola, and you have a sir l'chatat. So based on the hierarchy we just established, you would bring the seir first, and then the par afterwards. That's not what the Gemara says. It says you bring the par first, and then the seir afterwards. Amai, why would you say that? Hai chatat v'hai ola. The par is a ola, the seir is a chatat, the seir should have gone first. Amrei b'marova mishmei d'rova bar mari. Chatat avodat kochavim, chaseira aleph. The chatat of the avodat kochavim that's found in Parshat Shalach is written chaseira aleph. Vaya imene yada nestadish gaga, asukola beida parben bakar chad leoda, reach nichoach lashem, mincha tov niskoka mishpat, usirizim echad lechatat. That lechatat is missing an aleph, and therefore that chaser tells you that it's not up to snuff with a regular chatat, and so then it is subordinated to the oda. Rav Amar, as we just read in the pasuk with regards to the oda says, ka mishpat, ktiv bei, and the Gemara is learning ka mishpat means le'ikuv. The order of the psukim, when it says ka mishpat, means in this order, don't alter from this. So it's not subject to the normal hierarchy that you would apply, it's subject to the order of the psukim here. And again here, the oda comes before the chatat, and therefore you're going to bring the oda before the chatat, even though paradigmatically, we would have assumed the hierarchy would have been the opposite. Here, because the Torah prescribes it in this manner, we do it in that order. Seir, Avodat Kochavim, Kodim Seir Nasi. It comes to the Seir of Avodah Zarah, that goes before the Seir of the Nasi, my Daima, Hai Tzibur, Hai Yachid. Makes sense that the Tzibur should take precedence over the Yachid, even though we saw in the beginning of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that when it comes to being done, the king goes in first, and then the Am goes in afterwards. When it comes to the Day of Judgment, Hashem deals with the king and then deals with the Am. The Gemara over there brought two reasons as to why that would be. But it could be that the hierarchies that are mentioned here are not absolute hierarchies. They're hierarchies in particular situations. For Din, the king goes before the Am. When it comes to the Korbanot, the Am goes before the king. These are two different areas of halacha and hierarchy. You can't necessarily extrapolate what you're seeing here to other areas of halacha. This is particular to the area of Korbanot and Kapara at this point. Seir Nasi, Kodem L'Sirat Yachid. The Seir of the Nasi goes before the Seir of an individual, my Taima, Haimelech, Vahayajot. That's pretty simple or straightforward, which is the king takes precedence over a lay person. Sirat Yachid, Kodemet, the Kibsat Yachid. The Seir of the Yachid goes before the Kibsa of the Yachid. Remember when it comes to the Korbanot, Chataot, you have the Par Kohen Mashiach, that's a par. Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibor, par. The Nasi brings a Seir. The Yachid has a choice between a Seirah and a Kibsa. So here, if a person brings two Chataot, one that's a Seirah, one that is a Kibsa, here the Gemara says that you bring the Seirah before the Kibsa. Vahatanya, Kibsat Yachid Kodemet, the Seirat Yachid. Don't we have a Braita that says the Kibsa goes before the Seirah of the Yachid? Marbai Tanaehi. It's actually a machloket tanaim. Mar savar seira adifa shekein nitraba itzal avodat kochavim biyachid, because it shows up by a violation of the yachid by avodat kochavim. Remember that by the tzibur you have par olam davar shel tzibur, and in case of avodah zarah you have par leola seir lechatat. For yachid, if they have a chatat regila, they can bring either a seira or a kizba. It's a violation bishogeg unintentionally of avodah zarah. They bring a Se'ira. They don't have a choice anymore. So you see that the Se'ira is brought both by Avodah Zarah and regular mitzvot, so that's why it gets precedence. Umar Savar Kibsa Difa. The other Tano believes that a Kibsa should take precedence. Shekenit Rabba Balya. Because it has the tail fats that are put on the Mizbeach. The difference between a Korban that is brought from a Se'ir, then versus a Keves, it's brought in Vayikra with regards to the Chatat as well, but other Korbanot as well, that the Seir comes with their certain fats that are put on the Mizbeach. Be'keves, in addition to the fats of the Seir, also has an additional section of fats that are put on the Mizbeach, which is the Aliyah. The fats that are by the tail are also put on the Mizbeach. So since the Keves has an extra matana that goes on the Mizbeach, that's why it should take precedence over the Seir. So here you have a machloket tanaim as to whether the Seir or the Keves should take precedence. And here by the Chatat, the Seirah Kibsa, which one should go first if they are brought together? That is interesting, both because there are Gemarot in two places that deal with this issue. And one is in the Gemara in Kretot. The Gemara in Kretot, on Daf Chof Chet Amud Bet, has a story about Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech and the queen were sitting there eating, and the king says, Gedi, Ya'i, more tasty, better. Amalkata Amra, the queen said, Imra yoi, the kvasim, that the sheep are much more tasty. Amru, they said we need some arbiter to tell us whether the goats or the sheep are the more tasty meat. So Amru, nishayla li sachar ish kvar barkai. Let us ask, Yisachar ish kvar barkai, the Kohen Gadol, who? Bikimle kedeira. He's the Kohen Gadol, and he's going to know. He eats korbanot. He's eating meat all the time. He has a good sense of which meat is better. So they bring the Kohen Gadol. Shailu amalei igdia yoi yasik letamido. If goats are better, then you should bring them for the korban tamid. The korban tamid is brought at the keves echad taseh baboker, but the keves hasheni taseh ben arabayim. The korban tamid is brought from a keves, not from a goat. He waved his hand dismissively and said, of course, the goat is better. Now, he made two mistakes. One mistake was that he agreed with the queen instead of the king. And number two is he did it in a manner that was dismissive. He waved his hand. The king got upset at him and told his executioner to cut off the right hand of the Kohen Gadol. Obviously, that would disqualify him for sure from the service. But it also, cutting off the right hand, which is functional hand, that would have been problematic. So the Kohen Gadol bribes the executioner to cut off his left hand instead of his right hand. And that's what happens. The king gets wind of it and has his right hand cut off as well, not only his left hand. The Gemara here says that he got what he was deserving because this Kohen Gadol used to wear gloves when he did the avodah. He was more worried about his own kavod than the kavod of Shamayim. And we know you can't have any hefsek between the hands of the Kohen and all the avodah they're doing. Yet he wore gloves anyway. Because of his haughtiness and his selfish view of the avodah, the Chazal here say, Brich Rachmana, blessed is Hashem that brought him his due. He treated Kodesh Shemayim that way, and then he was punished for what that which he did. But then the Gemara concludes, in an interesting way, Amar Avashi, v'lo avatani le. Doesn't even know a Mishnah. That's not, the Mishnah says, Fasim kodmin li'izim b'chol makom. The keves goes before the aids in every place. Yochol mipnei shemuvcharim. You would think that maybe it's because the keves is better than the aids. The verse says, Tamalomar v'im keves l'amei sh'shneim shkulim kachat. It says, if you want to bring an aids, if you want to bring a keves, either one of them is interchangeable. There is no hierarchy between them. Ravina amar, afilu mikra nami lo kara. He didn't even read the pasuk. The pasuk says, Im keves, im eiz. If you want a keves, you want to bring an eiz, the psukim make it clear that either one is a good option. So that Gemara concludes that there is no distinction between a keves and an eiz, even though it gives precedence to kvasim over izim. It's very different than our Gemara. There the Gemara says, look, in the end you have to put something first. When you have a hierarchy, you have to put something first. So the Mishnah tells you the keves goes before the eiz. But the Mishnah says it's not because the keves is more important. It's just because we need a hierarchy, we need to put something first. Here the Gemara seems to indicate that there's a reason to put them first, and it's a machloket tanaim, as to which one goes first, but that's premised on a reason to give it precedence, not simply because we need to choose which one of them goes first. That's the first thing. The second thing is, the difference between a keves and an eiz might remind you of a story early on in Masechet Pesachim. Early on in Masechet Pesachim, there was this non-Jew. He used to go up every year and bring a Korban of Pesach in Yerushalayim. And he was boasting about this, where it says about him in the Torah, Kol ben echar lo yuchal bo, kol arel lo yuchal bo. The Korban of Pesach, you're not allowed to have a non-Jew participate and partake of the Korban of Pesach. And he, every year, would go up there. So now, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is speaking to him. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, according to the Baal Tosafot, was too old to go up to Yerushalayim. He was no longer going aliyah l'regel or bringing the Korban HaPesach. But he's speaking to him. He says to him, wait a minute. Did they ever give you the best part of the Korban HaPesach? Make sure when you go up there, you get the best part of it. Make sure you ask them for the tail. So when he got up there to Yerushalayim, he went ahead and asked them, make sure you give me from the tail. That's the piece of the Korban HaPesach I want. The Chachamim that were there in Yerushalayim, when they heard his request, Amrlei aliyah l'gvoa salka. The tail goes to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the fats that go to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Amalei, ma'na ma'lan halchi. Who told you to ask for the fats of the tail? Amalei, Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira. It was Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira who told me to do that. Amru, my high to come on. What's going on over here? Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira knows that the tail fats go on the Mizbeach. Badku batrevesh ku darmahu bekadlu. They realized that he was a non-Jew and they killed him. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Teira set up a trap by telling him to ask for the tail fats because he couldn't be in Yerushalayim because he knew they would know that the tail fats go on the Mizbeach. But the truth is that a Korban HaPesach can come from a Keves or can come from an Eiz. It's only true by the Keves that the tail fats go on the Mizbeach, not by the Eiz. Rashi over there says, v'kevesaya. He knew that he was bringing up a keves as a korban pesach, and that's why it worked out. And the Balei HaTosfot would say, afal gidi, eni aliyato kreva, rov pischeim hayutzleh. So even though he could be bringing a gdi, where the tail fats don't go on the mizbeach, nevertheless he says, rov pischeim hayutzleh. The majority of their pesach came from lambs and not from kids. Or he offers an alternative, which is, the Rabbi Yehuda Mater specifically told him to ask for the lamb tail fat. And that's how they knew that it was a trap. All right. Anyway, that's just interesting. Because first of all, we see in the Gemara Pesachim about the fact that the tail fats of the keves are a unique aspect to it and had halakhic ramifications in that case. In addition, we saw that the Gemara in Kretot says that there is no distinction between keves and eis, as opposed to our Gemara over here, which has a machloket tanaim, which seems to give precedence to one over the other based on the reasoning that we saw. Now the Gemara continues. Komer kodem lekeves. So now we are in Sfirat the Omer. The Omer goes before the keves habayimo. The Omer itself goes before the animal, the korban that is associated with it. Same thing with Shavuot. Shtei alechem that are brought in Shavuot are kodem the kvasim habayimahem. Go before the shtei kvasim that are shlamim, shalmei tzibur, that come with them. Zeklau. Here's the general principle that goes behind these last two, which is davar abar begin the yom. That the item that comes because of the particular day takes precedence over something that comes because of that particular item. In essence, the korbanot are coming because of the omer. The omer is the korban hayom, so that's what goes first. The animal that's brought because of the korban omer to be associated with the korban omer, that comes second, and it makes sense because it's only a derivative of the primary item that is being brought. It's not brought first because it's not the primary korban over here. And we know that from the fact that the animals are brought in a wave offering with the breads or with the omer, and therefore they are associated with those particular korbanot or menachot. And for that reason, the menachot or the lechem goes first, and then the korbanot go afterwards. Next Mishnah. Now that we're dealing with hierarchy, we're going to deal with hierarchy in another context, which is Aish, kodem leisha, lachayot, ulashiv aveda. When it comes to sustaining, choosing which one to keep alive, man goes before the woman, and Hashavata Veda, the man goes before the woman. If you can help out the man, you do it before the woman. Generally, the Gemara and the Rishonim, when dealing with this, distinguish between the fact that the man has more mitzvot to do, as well as the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and so therefore the bitul Talmud Torah and the bitul mitzvot that is associated with the time consumption of looking for the Aveda, should give precedence to the man over the woman. With regards to the Chayoto, they use the same reasoning, which is that the man is Chayav in more mitzvot than the woman, and therefore we keep him precedence in terms of the Chayoto. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's on a higher level, it's just someone who can perform more mitzvot, and for that reason we're going to give him precedence. But Aisha Kodem Leish Leksut, when it comes to clothing, and you have a choice of whom to clothe, you would give it to the woman before the man. Or to redeem them from captivity, you would give the woman precedence over the man. If both of them are going to be subject to arayot, haish kodem leisha, then we get the man out of there before the woman. That is because, even though, of course, it's a terrible avla if a woman is raped, but it's still the natural way that things happen. For a man to be sodomized is something that Rashi knows of here is embarrassing, as tremendous clone associated with it because of its unnaturalness, that we would give priority to redeeming the man over the woman to prevent that type of embarrassment or difficulty that would be caused from him from such an action. All right, Tan Rabbanan. Hayahu Baviv Rabo B'Shevi. He, his father, and his Rebbe are all in captivity. Hu Kodem L'Rabo. He goes first. That's a general principle, which is whenever it comes to you and someone else, you take precedence over that someone else, because chayecha kodmim. That's the limit of Rabbi Akiva, that you have to choose between two parties. Your life always takes precedence over someone else's life. But then Rabbo kodem l'aviv, his Rebbe goes before his father. This is discussed extensively in the Gemara in Bava Metzia'ah with regards to Hashavat HaVeidah, where it says that Hashavat HaVeidah Rabbo goes before his father. That's because the Mishnah says, Rabbo may vio l'chaye olam haba. His Rebbe brings him to olam haba. Aviv may vio l'olam hazeh. So you give precedence to the olam haba over olam hazeh. For that reason, the Gemara over there says, if his father is also his Rebbe, then his father gets precedence. And there, the Gemara, as well as the Rishonim, deal with, what does it mean to be a Rebbe? When is someone considered to be a Rebbe? And when is your father also considered to be a Rebbe? How much Torah does he have to teach you in order to get that classification? But, in a sense where you can bifurcate between the dinim, and the Rebbe is the teacher, and the father is simply the provider, then the Rebbe as the teacher will go before the father as the provider. Imo kodemet lekulam. In all these instances, mother goes first in terms of redemption. Now, here you could argue that imo kodemet means she goes first even before he himself, because the difficulty that the woman has in Beit HaShevi, like we saw in the Mishnah, or you could say that she is first after he himself. That once he frees himself, then he has more ability to free others than he can free his mother. Although, based on the Mishnah, it would seem that his mother goes first, period, even before he himself. Chacham kodem lemelech Yisrael. In this hierarchy, a Talmud Chacham goes before the king. Chacham shemeit, ein lanu kiyotze bo. Because if a Talmud Chacham, or a great Godel, dies, there's no replacement. He is unique. Melech Yisrael shemeit, ko Yisrael ruim lemalchut. When the Melech Yisrael dies, then all Jews are available to be the king. Now, the truth is that the kingship or the dynasty of the king only can come from Yehuda. Either you have to say that was only later on, it was relegated to Yehuda, but in theory, anybody in Klai Yisrael could have been a king. Or the truth is that maybe even from other areas of Klai Yisrael, you can appoint people of leadership. It's just that you can't have a permanent dynasty that supplants the dynasty of Yehuda. But there are time periods where you will have other kings that exist, or even maybe temporarily, or in coordination with the king from Yehuda, you can have leadership. But here it says that when it comes to leadership, leadership is something that is replaceable. When it comes to a Talmud Chacham, that is something that is irreplaceable. Therefore, you would give precedence to the Talmud Chacham over the Melech. Melech kodem lekohen gadol. The king goes before the kohen gadol, shnemar. So here we're going to bring Psukim from David HaMelech, where it says, Vayomer HaMelech lahem, chu imachem et abdei adunaychem. Here, David HaMelech, after the discussion with Bathsheba and Natan HaNavi about the fact that Adoniah is proclaiming himself the heir to the throne, and they're saying, isn't it Shlomo HaMelech who's supposed to be the king? So then the king commands to them, chu imachem et abdei adunaychem. Go ahead and take the servants of the master. So either it's because he's calling them Avadim, take the Avadim over here. He's speaking to Natan HaNavi. And in that sense, he's saying to Natan HaNavi, take Avdei Adonaychem, which includes Tzadok HaKohen. Well, the truth is that it seems like Tzadok HaKohen was there as well. And therefore, Rashi says it comes from the fact that it says, Chu imachem et Avdei Adonaychem. David declares himself a master vis-a-vis the Kohen Gadol over there. And because of that, it sounds like he is the master, or it takes precedence over the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol kodem lenavi. The Kohen Gadol goes before the Navi, Shnemar. Because when David's giving those instructions, it says, Umashachoto atsham, Tzadok Kohen, venatan navi. He tells him, take Shlomo HaMelech down to the Gichon to anoint him, and there you, Tzadok Kohen and Natan navi, should anoint him as the new king. Hikdim Tzadok venatan. In terms of the order there, he says Tzadok HaKohen before Natan HaNavi ve'omer. But it also says, Shmana Yoshua HaKohen HaGadol, ata v're'acha. It also says in Zechariah that you, listen here, Yoshua HaKohen Gadol, you and your friends, Yochol Hedyotota, you, who were the other parties, the Re'im that he's speaking about? You would think they were lay people? Talmud Lomar, ki anshef mofet heima, that these are wondrous people. Mofet elu navi. Mofet is also a word that is used with regards to navi, shenemar. Give you a sign or something wondrous. So here you see that there's a connection between ota mofet, which is what the navi uses to demonstrate his credentials. And here it's saying that along with Yoshua Kohen Gadol, there are these people who are anshe mofet, which means that they are people who provide moftim or a navi. And yet it says, Yoshua Kohen Gadol, ata v'reacha, you and your friends. So it gives precedence to the Kohen Gadol before Re'acha. The reason that they brought the second Pasuk, either is because the Rosh over here brings two reasons, either because of the fact that here you had a Kohen Gadol in Bayit Rishon, and then a Kohen Gadol in Bayit Sheni. The Kohanim Gadolim in Bayit Rishon also had a sense of nevuah with them because they wore the Urim v'Tumim. And therefore, maybe the reason the Kohen Gadol goes before the Navi is because he's a Kohen Gadol and a Navi, and that's why he gets precedence. So that's why they bring in the second puzzle, which says Yeshua Kohen Gadol, who does not have an Urim v'Tumim, he still took precedence over the Navi. Or it could be that by David HaMelech, he had to put one of them first. He's speaking to them. He has to speak to both of them. He put them both in a sentence. Doesn't mean that one is better than the other just because he put them in that order. He has to put one first. Maybe there's nothing to be read into it. On the other hand, in the pasuk in Zechariah, there it speaks to the Kohen Gadol ata vereacha. And there was no reason to put the Kohen Gadol before the Navi, but the fact that it's expressed ata vereacha shows you that the Kohen Gadol gets precedence, and that's what is meant in the pasuk by David HaMelech. It wasn't just simply he was saying it, but there is precedence in the Kohen Gadol over the Navi. Meshuach b'shemen ha-mishka, kodem l'mirube bigadim. The one who is anointed, the Kohen Gadol is anointed with Shemen Mishka, goes before the Kohen Gadol, who is serving, because he wears the vestments, the eight vestments of the Kohen Gadol. This issue is interesting only because it can only happen once in history. That is that there is a point in time where you have a transition from Kohenim Gadolim that were Meshuchim Shemen Mishka, to Kohenim Gadolim, who no longer were anointed with Shemen Mishka, but came into service because they wore the eight Begadim of the Kohen Gadol. And that's the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Yoshiyahu HaMelech puts the Shemen HaMishcha into Gnizah. We saw that in yesterday's daf. So during the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, you had a Kohen Gadol who was appointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. And then after he put it into Gnizah, you might have had a Kohen Gadol that was appointed in Ruvah Begadim. So the only time you come into a conflict or a contrast between them would be that moment in history, which is at the time when they were Gones, the Shemen HaMishcha, you could have had a Kohen Gadol that was Mashuach with Shemen HaMishcha, and a Kohen Gadol that was Merubeh B'Gadim. Other times in history, either had the Shemen HaMishcha and they got that, or you didn't have it and nobody had it. So there would be no competition between the two, although there are those that suggest that it might have been even earlier in Bayit Rishon that sometimes they didn't have time to be Moshech, the Kohen Gadol, when the first one went out of service, so the new one came into service through Merubeh B'Gadim rather than Shemen HaMishcha, and therefore you could have this question even earlier. But once the Shemen HaMishcha goes into Gnizah, it's no longer really a question. Merubeh Begadim kodem l'Mashiach she'avar, machmat kerio. The Merubeh Begadim, who is an in-service Kohen Gadol now, goes before a Kohen Gadol who had Mashiach, but he is now taken out of service because he is Tamei. So Mashiach she'avar, machmat kerio, kodem l'avar, machmat mumo. A Kohen Gadol is removed from service because of Tum'ah, takes precedence over a Kohen Gadol that was removed from service because he had a blemish. That is because the keri is a mum over, it's something that's going to pass, versus a mum, which is a permanent blemish, which is going to disqualify him forever. Avar machmat mumo, kodem l'mshuach milchama. A Kohen Gadol emeritus takes precedence over the Kohen who was anointed to be the leader of the battle, the one that goes out to battle with them and does everything that is said in Sefer Dvarim with regards to the troops entering into battle. So the Kohen Gadol, who is now out of service, takes precedence over him. That's because he was a Kohen Gadol versus Meshuach Milchama, which is a lower echelon. Meshuach Milchama Kodem Miskan. The Meshuach Milchama, who is an in-service Kohen, is now serving and is anointed at the time that they had the Shemen Mishcha to be the Kohen that leads the army. That Kohen takes precedence of the Skan, who is the backup Kohen Gadol. So the backup Kohen Gadol is not an in-service Kohen. He's just waiting there in case something happens to the Kohen Gadol that he can step into his shoes. But he's not a Kohen Gadol that is in service or was in service. He's a Kohen waiting to possibly be the Kohen Gadol. He's on deck, but he doesn't have any status vis-a-vis a Kohen Mashuach who's already in service. Skan, the backup Kohen Gadol, goes kodem l'amarkal, goes before the amarkal. My amarkal, what is meant by that? Amar chista amar kula, that he says everything. He dictates everything that happens. That's what Rashi says over here. Shememuneh al kula. He is in charge of everything that happens there. Ve'em yishivim al dvarav. Nobody questions his authority. Others translate this as the keepers of the doors, trusted with the keys, and the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, meaning that this was someone who ran the Mikdash. He's in charge of the Mikdash, so he is below the Skan. Amarkal called him the Gizbar. The Amarkal has precedence over the treasurer or the treasurers of the Mikdash. Gizbar, Kodem Narosh Mishmar, the treasures of the Mikdash take precedence over the heads of the Mishmarot. Mishmarot are the 24 different Mishmarot that the Kohanim are divided up into to do Avodah in the Mikdash. Rosh Mishmar, Kodem Narosh Beidav, the head of a Mishmar, one of those 24, that takes precedence over the subordinates who are the Rosh Beidav. Each Mishmar was broken up into 6 Batei Avot, because each day of the week, one of the Batei Avot would work from that Mishmar. So the head of the Beidav is subordinate to the head of the Mishmar. Rosh Beidav, Kodem Nekehoin Hedrot. And the person who's the head of the Beidav goes before a lay person who's a Kohen. As you're asking over here, it seems to be that some of these positions were not necessarily filled by Kohanim. The Amarkal, the Kizbar, aren't necessarily required to be Kohanim. Although in practice, I think many of them might have been Kohanim. But nevertheless, based on the Gemara, if you just read it in Pashtut, these people, even if they were not Kohanim, would take precedence because of their work with the Mikdash and their importance in the functioning of the Mikdash. Yibailu, Linyan Tuma. When it comes to Tuma, Skan u'mashuach mil'machama, Itzehem Kodem. Which one of them goes first? So we said before, in terms of hierarchy, the Meshuach Milchama is more important than the Iskan. That is because the Meshuach Milchama is an in-service Kohen that is doing something of importance, whereas the Iskan is a Kohen Hedjot, just waiting or on deck to be the Kohen Gadol. But when it comes to Tuma, there maybe not. Because the Meshuach Milchama is a Voda, first of all, is outside of the Mikdash. That's number one. Number two is the whole point of the Iskan Kohen Gadol is to be a backup for the Kohen Gadol. He becomes Tamei. If the backup is Tamei, then you lose the backup, in essence, because he is Tamei. So Rav Zutcher, Beit Rav Nachman, Tashma, the Tanya, Rav Breita, Skan u'mashuach milchama, shayu ma'alchim baderech, you have them walking together, u'paga b'hem meit mitzvah, and all of a sudden they bump into a meit mitzvah, they have to determine who's going to take care of the meit mitzvah and become Tamei. Mutav shi Tamei m'shuach milchama, v'al yi Tamei Skan. It's better that the Meshuach Milchama becomes Tamei, and not the Skan Kohen. Shim, Yerabo Psul, the Kohen Gadol, Nechnas Skan, Umishamesh Taktav. Exactly this reason. Your whole purpose is to be a backup. If you become Tamei, you're no longer a backup, because you can't fill into the shoes of the Kohen Gadol. Vatanya. Didn't our bright to say Meshuach Milchama Kodem Laskan? Didn't we just read in terms of precedence that the Meshuach Milchama goes before the Skan? Marina Kitanyahi Lachayoto. That is with regards to either sustaining him, redeeming him from captivity. In terms of his necessity to Klal Yisrael as a whole, then the Meshuach Milchama has a more important role than the backup Kohen Gadol. But in terms of Tum'ah, there the Meshuach Milchama is not necessarily taken out of service because of his Tum'ah, because he works outside of the Mikdash. And number two is, he doesn't need to be in service at all moments. Whereas the Skan Kohen could be called upon at any moment, and his being Tamei basically ruins his whole purpose of being the backup Kohen Gadol. What's interesting is that in Masechet Avot, Perek Dalet, it says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosha Ketarimim. There are 3 counts. Keter Torah, Keter Kihuna, Keter Malchut, Keter Shem Tov, Ole Al Gabeyen. And there, the Rambam in the Perish HaMishnayot explains about it. Kihuna, Zacha Ba'aharon. Aharon and his family were Zocheh in the Kuna. Malchut, Zacha Ba'Beit David. That went to the family of David. Keter Torah, Munach Lakol. Keter Torah is available to all. V'chol Mishi Yirtzeh Liot Mukhtar Bo. Anybody who wants to take it can take it. Amru Shema Tomar Zeh Keter Pachot Mi'ashnaim. You would think maybe that Keter is on a lower level because anybody can come and get it. Elekel Gadolhu Mi'ashnaim Ubo Yu'ashnaim. It's even greater than the other two. And Keter Torah, Ole Al Kulan. Keter Torah is greater than the Keter Machut and the Keter Kuna Gedolah. So what's interesting about this is, number one, that's what the Gemara said here, that the Talmud Chacham goes before the Melech, and the Talmud Chacham goes before the Kohen Gadol, because the Melech goes before the Kohen Gadol. So there you see Keter Torah, then Keter Machut, and then Keter Kihuna. So that's the order or the hierarchy over here. But what's interesting over here is that the Rambam says that Keter Torah is available to everyone, as opposed to Keter Machut, which is not available to everyone because it goes to the Davidic line. Yet over here in the Gemara, it says that Keter Machut is less than Keter Torah, because not everybody can be a Talmud Chacham, but anybody can be the king. So it's very interesting. The way the Rambam expresses it, that anybody can be a Talmud Chacham, that's why Keter Torah Olei Al Gabeyen. Keter Malchut is limited because only the people from the Davidic line can be Melachim. For that exact reasoning, the Gemara says over here that a Talmud Chacham is unique because not everybody can be a Talmud Chacham. The king is not unique because anybody could be the king. So it's the exact opposite reasoning, but coming up with the same hierarchy. So anyway, that's just to note, because again, Torah is not a Yerusha, which differentiates it from the Malchut for sure, and maybe even a little bit the Kuna Gedola, because even though the Kohen Gadol necessarily isn't a Yerusha, but Kohanim as a whole are a Yerusha, it comes from your birthright, the Torah is available to everyone. So that's something both as an incentive for a person to take up the Keter Torah, because it is available and open to everyone. But there's also the tzad that our Gemara speaks about, that once a person is a Talmud Chacham, they're not necessarily replaceable. And therefore you can create a unique standing, even though you can't be the king or can't be the Kohen Gadol, you can be a Talmud Chacham. All right, next Mishnah. Kohen Kodem LeLevi. The Kohen goes before the Levi. Levi the Israel. Israel the Mamzer. Umamzer the Natin. Venatin the Ger. Veger the Eved Meshuchrar. So now here, this is a hierarchy. Obviously, Gemara is going to ask why that is. Hey, Matai, when is this true? Bizman Shukulam Shavim. That's when they're all on the same level. Avalim Haya Mamzer Tamar Chochem. Kohen Gadol Amaharetz. If you have a question between a Mamzer Tamar Chochem and a Kohen Gadol Amaharetz, Mamzer Tamar Chochem, call them the Kohen Gadol Amaharetz. So even though there's a birthright and a hierarchy through your birthright, a person who is a Tamar Chochem can overcome that issue. Now, it's interesting that they only give the example of a Talmud Chacham Amaretz. They don't give the example of a Talmud Chacham Eved Meshuchrar or a Talmud Chacham Ger. Is that to say because that's where it limits it to? Mamzer is the lowest form where Talmud Chacham would overcome it? Or is it just bringing you an example of a Mamzer and anything below him also? If they become a Talmud Chachamim, then it's fine. Although it might be because a Mamzer could be appointed to be a judge, whereas the other parties here cannot be appointed to be a judge, and therefore it might be particular to the Mamzer that it says over here that if he's a Talmud Chacham, he gets precedence. Kohen Kodem LeLevi. Why does the Kohen go before the Levi? Because in Divrei Yamim it says, Bnei Amram, Aaron Moshe, Vayibadel Aharon Lahakdisho Kodesh Kodashim. So Aaron was delineated, separated away to be holy of holies, meaning that he is above the regular Levi. He's been taken out of Shevet Levi and given a unique standing. So you see, Kohanim take precedence over Levim. Levi Kodim Yisrael Shnemar Beitaiv Dilashem et Shevet Levi. At that time, Hashem designated Shevet Levi to be a unique Shevet or different than the rest of Klal Yisrael. Yisrael Kodim the Mamzer. Yisrael goes before Mamzer, which is probably obvious, but the Gemara dictates the logic. Shazem Yuchas V'zeinu Yuchas. A regular Yisrael has Yuchus. A Mamzer doesn't have Yichus because he was born from a licit relationship. Mamzer Kodem Lenatin, Zeba Mitipak Sheira. He was born to parents were both Jewish, where Zeba Mitipak Sula. On the other hand, the Natin comes from non-Jewish precedents. The Natinim are people who, at the time of Yoshua, people who came and tried to trick Bnei Yisrael into allowing them to join. And afterwards, Yoshua puts him in his work, makes him into woodcutters and water drawers for Bnei Yisrael. But they have this status as a quasi-Jew, but they're not full-fledged. Natin called him the Ger. And Natin goes for a Ger, ze gadel imanu b'kdusha, ze lo gadel imanu b'kdusha. That's because the Natin grew up amongst us, within the world of Judaism and understanding of the Kdusha, amongst Klal Yisrael his whole life, ze lo gadel imanu b'kdusha, the Ger, only came and joined us at a certain point. He had a whole lifetime before he joined us where he was amongst the non-Jews. Ger kodem le'eved mishukrar. A ger goes before a slave who is freed. Zeya b'klal arur. Vezelo aya b'klal arur. A slave is subject to the arur of Noach, whereas the ger is not subject to the curse of Noach. Now, over here you can read this Gemara in one of two ways. Either we're speaking about an eved kanani, because an Eved Kanani who's Meshuchrar, he goes through a partial conversion process when he's made into an Eved Kanani. Then when he's freed, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. So it's a Gerut that goes through a different path, the path of Eved. But there an Eved Kanani is cursed because that's who Noah cursed. He cursed Canaan, the son of Ham. And that curse is still with Canaan, and that's why a vote on what their children to marry the people of Canaan. But here you have that hierarchy that a non-Jew converts is on a higher level than an Eved Mishukrar, just because Eved Mishukrar is subject to Arur. Rashi over here says something very interesting, and he says that any Eved is included in this. Says, Canaan, lo matza Noach lalalik nan gdola mizo. When Noach wanted to curse someone, he couldn't find a bigger curse than this. She Eved Echav. He should be a servant or slave to his brethren. Mikan should call Eved Hariu Bichlal Arur. Any servant, any Eved is under that rubric of Arur. Eved and Arur are synonymous based on what Rashi is saying. Therefore, it would not be uniquely associated with an Eved Kanani. It would be true of any Eved. They are in this category of Arur because when Noach is looking for a curse, this is the curse he gives to show you that type of position is a cursed position, not just when it's associated with an Eved Kanani. Emetai b'zman shekulan shavin. That's when they're all equated. Menahani mile. How do we know that a mamzer tamar chocham takes precedence of a kohen gadol amaretz? Amar Rakov Rabbi Chanina Makra, yikarahi mipninim. It is more precious than jewels or precious stones. It's a reference to the Torah. In the Gemara Darshins, mipninim, mikohen gadol shenichnas lifnai vilifnim. Mipninim doesn't just mean jewels. It's also a play on the word of panim, or pnim, someone who goes in. The Kohen Gadol goes lifnai vilifnim, obviously, which gives him a certain stature. Nevertheless, karahi, there's something more precious than that, and that is Torah. So someone with Torah will take precedence over the Kohen Gadol, even though his service involves going into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, Torah sits above that. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Yochai Omer, B'dinu Shiyavdim Eved Mishukhrar the Ger. It makes sense that the Eved Kanani who is freed, or according to Rashi, any Eved who is freed and then converts, should take precedence, the Ger, over a convert. Shezeh Gadali Menu B'Kdusha. Shezeh Lo Gadali Menu B'Kdusha. The Ger is coming from a foreign place, a foreign nation, and then joining Klal Yisrael. The Eved grew up amongst the Jews. He just wasn't Jewish at the time. He was an Eved at the time. But he has been influenced by growing up in a Jewish context. So when he becomes Jewish, when he's freed, that should have given him precedence over a Ger. Ella, Zeya Bichlal Arur, Vezelo Aya Bichlal Arur. So it goes back to the reasoning that we saw before in the Braita before, which is the Eved is Arur, and therefore he loses stature or status, even though he grew up with us, and even though he should have been no different than a Ger. Shol Tomi David Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Menei Ma, Kol Ratzim Nisa Gioret, Fena Kol Ratzim Nisa Mishukhreret. Why is it everybody goes to run and marry a woman who's a Gioret, and nobody goes to run and marry a woman who is a Shifcha, who was freed? So over here, Rashi has a Girsa of Rotzim, rather than Ratzim, but in either case, Rashi seems to indicate it's a situation in which you have to choose between one of these two. It's not a situation in which there is Israelite. It's clear that they would have picked the Israelite over these two. It's just a question, when it comes to these two, why do people favor the Gioret over the Shifcha Mishukhreret? Same reason that we gave him before, the Arur has impact over here. The Baracher, Zoaita Bechezkat Shamur, Zoloaita Bechezkat Shamur. That the Gioret is not someone who freely sleeps with men, as opposed to the Shifcha, who does freely sleep with men. That might be precipitated by a number of factors. First of all, the Shifcha is not really in control, because she has a master, and she's subject to the will and whim of others. Number two is, she doesn't really have in halacha, kiddushin, or an ability to establish a marriage halachically, as opposed to a non-Jewish woman who can establish such a relationship. And even though this is the biggest problem, Gemara in Ketubot seems to indicate that a woman who is a convert is psula the kuna, because she is classified as a zona. That's because a woman, before she becomes Jewish, we don't assume that she is careful both of being in a monogamous relationship as well as not sleeping with other men. So then why over here are you telling us that she's b'cheskat shamur? How could that be? So Rashi over here brings Lashon Acher, Gioret Bayli Gure Umishamerit Atzma, the fish b'data v'hit gayer. It's not all women or non-Jewish women in general are more careful than a Shivka, but a woman who has an intent to convert, she knows what the behaviors that are expected of her when she becomes Jewish. And therefore, during that period of time where she has in mind or the thought to convert, in that period of period, she is Shomer herself. So it even happens before she converted, but there are possibilities that before that, that her behavior was not as shamur as we'd expect, and that might explain the Gemara in Ketubot and other places that say that she has the status of a zona. So now the Gemara continues, Shaul told me David Rabbi Lazar, Ibna kema kelev makir et kono, v'chatul enu makir et kono. Why is it that the dog recognizes its master, and the cat does not recognize its master? Amar lehem, Uma ochel mima she'achbar ochel mishakeach. If you eat from food that a mouse ate from, it causes you to forget. Someone who eats a mouse itself, certainly they're going to forget. I mean, they're going to forget their master. Their master here is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Kelev, the dog, is very obedient and follows the word of God. We have instances in the Torah where the Torah tells us, by Yitzhak Mitzrayim, lo yacharatz Kelev lishono, that the dogs didn't bark when Bnei Yisrael were leaving Mitzrayim. So we have cases where they were compliant or obedient with Hashem. The Midrash Chazal tells us in other places, that's why they're rewarded with the Nevelah, is because of their behavior in Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The Chatul, on the other hand, doesn't show any sort of allegiance to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That could be speaking about here. Or it could be speaking about, in a more narrow sense, that a dog in general is more loyal to its master, versus a cat who is not so loyal to their master, and the difference being what they eat, according to this. Why is it that they are at the bottom of the food chain, and everybody's chasing after the mice in order to eat them? Because they are bad mice. So now the Rashi says over here, it's very interesting, he says, Suro means sar shelahem. He says the play on the word samech is really a sin, and it means sar shalem, their guiding angel. Kedamar beger shesurora. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says beger shesurora. Then yetzer hara sar shelo hurahu. That it refers to the yetzer hara, which means his sar, or that his ministering angel is bad, or that he has something tainted about him. Now that Gemara in Bava Metzia is very controversial, as well as the parallel Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Ayin, where it says that Gerim Haim Kashim Yisrael Ke Sapacha. That's dealing with Onat Dvarim, where you're not allowed to say things to people that will be punishing or hurting to them, including you can't say to a ger, your parents were non-Jewish. You can't make fun of them, or you can't denigrate them because they are Gerim. So there in Onat Dvarim it says that the ger is suro ra. There's machloket in the Rishonim. What does it mean that a ger is suro ra? The Balei Tosfot quote from, I think it's Avram Ager over there, that suro ra means that they cause problems for Klal Yisrael. That is because the gerim are so makpid ala mitzvot that they make the Jews look bad because they do their mitzvah more carefully. The other more mainstream view in the Rishonim is that the ger is suro ra means that, first of all, they have a high likelihood of returning to their old ways, and therefore they're at risk. That's number one. And number two is Suro Ra, is that they cause punishment to Klal Yisrael because there's a demand in the Torah to take care of the Gerim. And if you don't take care of the Gerim, then you're going to be punished. That could be Suro Ra. That's that reference in Rashi. So Rashi says that they have a bad Yetzer. That's basically what the Achbarim have. Mahi, what's this bad thing that they do? Rabbi Amar, afilu glime gaitse. They chew down or they nibble even on cloaks or on clothing, where they can't eat it, they just nibble on it, even though it's not bringing them any nutrition. Rapapa Amar, so Rabba's Talmud, Rapapa says, afilu shufta maro gaitze. They even nibble on the handle of a hoe. And at the wooden handle, they'll nibble on it, and they'll ruin it. Now the truth is, that's because the achbarim are in the classification of rodents, and one of the character traits of a rodent is that their teeth grow endlessly. They never stop growing. If they don't take care of that, it would actually kill themselves because the teeth will get so big that they won't be able to eat anymore. They won't be able to function. So these rodents have to always be chewing on things to shave their teeth down. And that's why they're chewing all the time. But that's what this reference is to, is that they're always chewing on things. No matter what it is, they'll chew on it even if it's not food. And that's what it means, suran ra. So now we jump to this because of the questions that we asked to Rabbi Elazar. So yeah, once on this topic, the Gemara is going to expand upon this and say, Tanrabanan, chamisha dvarim meshachachim et ha-limud. That's the girsa that we have over here. Although, girsa that you have in Rashi and in other places is meshachachim et ha-talmud. That's not just limud. It makes a person forget their learning. it makes them forget Talmud, specifically the learning of Gemara. It causes them to forget their learning. Ochel mima she'ochel achbar. That was the reference before that we saw that Rabbi Elazar said, well, if you eat something that the achbar ate, then you're going to forget. And certainly if you eat the achbar itself, you're going to forget. So here is that idea, that if you eat from what the achbar eats, umea she'ochel chatul, or something that the cat eats. So over here, I'm combining them as one item, because you're going to see here, otherwise there are six items in the list, and here it headed it with five. So if you eat from something that the mouse eats, or eat something that the cat eats, that will cause you to forget. Ochel leiv shel beima, someone who eats the heart of an animal. Varagil bezeitim, or someone who eats olives. Here it seems to be that it's either raw olives or salted olives. Shotem mayim shel shurei rechitza, someone who drinks the water that is the residue or residual of someone's bathing. Or they wash their feet one on top of the other. Interesting only because that's the way the Kohanim did Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim in the Mikdash. And so the Mishnayim point out that when you're doing a mitzvah, we don't worry about these types of things. So too, someone who sleeps with their clothing under their head, that again also is done by the Kohanim in the Mikdash, as described in Mishnayot. Although the Gemara eventually says that's not literally under their heads, it was next to their heads, so maybe it's not exactly the same. Or you have to argue that they're in the midst of servicing in the Mikdash, therefore it's okay, but you shouldn't sleep with your clothes under your head. There are five things that cause a person to get the limud back, or the gears of Talmud back. Pat pachmin, bread that is made on the coals. The choshkein pachmin atzman, and certainly coals themselves, or the charcoal that comes along with it, meaning that the bread and the charcoal area, certainly that is good for remembering. Vochel beitza megugelet below melach, someone eats a scrambled egg,
or maybe a roasted or hard-boiled egg,
without salt. Vargil b'shemen zayit, someone who eats olive oil. Vargil b'yayin u'b'samim, someone who normally has wine and spices. Vashotet mayim shoshirei isa, and someone who drinks the water, that's the residual, the residue of kneading of dough. Someone dips his finger in salt and then eats. Now the Gemara says, based on this, a ragil b'shem and zayit, someone who normally partakes of olive oil. Misayel Rabbi Yochanan. That is a help to what Rabbi Yochanan told us. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. K'shem shazayit mishakeach limud shel 70 shana. Because of the forgetting of the learning of 70 years, that doesn't mean you were learning for 70 years, but something you already remembered for 70 years. That's how Rashi interprets it. So too, olive oil returns learning that something you learned 70 years ago that you forgot about. It helps to bring it back. But again, Rabbi Yochanan is contrasting olives with olive oil, that olive oil is beneficial in this area. Olives are detrimental in this area. Someone who normally partakes or drinks wine and spices. Vaseyel Rova, that is helpful to Rova. Dama Rova, Chamra Vrechani Pichim. That wine and good smells or good spices, Pichim. Either he's saying, make you smart, or those are the things that made me smart. Meaning that they were helpful for me in being the person that I am. Tovel Etz Boba Melach, someone who dips his finger into salt. Amrish Lakish Ubachat. You should only be dipping one finger in the salt. That's a machlok tanaim. Achat v'lo shtayim. Person puts his finger in salt. Remember, in their day, they ate with their hands. The use of utensils, it was only something that came about in recent history. Until that point in time, people ate with their hands. So if you want to salt something, you dip your finger in the salt. That's how you got the salt. And then you put it with the food. So that's how you got your food that was salted. But he says, you should only put one finger in the salt, not two. Yosemer shtayim v'lo shalosh. You should put in two fingers and not three fingers. The simanech, and the way to remember that is kmitza. The thumb is called the godel. The pointer finger is called the etzba. The middle finger is called the ama. The ring finger is called the kmitza. And the pinky is called the zeret. Those are the Gemara, the Hebrew names for the fingers. Rashi explains over here that the way to remember this is the kmitza. The kmitza is your third finger, the ring finger. If you pull the ring finger down, you put the kmitza down, then you're left with two fingers up on one side and one finger up on the other side. And that's the memory aid. To remember that one of them says one and one of them says two. And the godel, the thumb, doesn't count because it's not on the same plane as the other fingers. So if you want to remember what the two opinions were, put your kmitza down, and that's a memory aid to tell you that one opinion says one and not two, and the other opinion says two and not three. Because the halacha is about fingers dipping in salt, if you use the kmitza, you'll remember then which were the opinions about how many fingers to put into the salt. Asarat marim kashim lilimud. There are 10 things that are difficult for learning. Or again, here, if you use it should be Talmud for the learning of Gemara. Over tachat afsar ha-gamal, someone who goes under the reins of a gamal, v'chol shekein tachat gamal atzmo. Certainly, if you go under the gamal itself, these are bad. But over ben shnei gmalim, someone who passes between two camels, over ben shnei nashim, someone who goes between two women, v'isha over ben shnei nashim, or a woman who goes between two men. It's not that the woman is learning and she's going to forget her learning, because if you're talking about Talmud, in the time of the Gemara, that was not necessarily acceptable. So I think it means that if the woman walks between the two men, she will cause the two men to forget their learning. Someone who goes under the terrible odor of a nevela. Rashi over here explains that does not mean that you're literally under the nevela, but he rather says, Klomar, Olechu meiriach reach nevela. Someone's going along and smells that smell. So kol olechu meiriach have over tachat uto reach. So reach olech veole. Smell, by definition, rises. And so anybody who's walking and smells something, they are under that smell. It might even be the usage of the term that we have today, which is you are under the influence of. So under the influence of, and same thing over here, they might be using it in the same way, which is tachat hareach. You're under the smell, meaning you're under the influence of that smell. You're being influenced by that smell. You go under a bridge under which no water has passed in the last 40 days. Someone who eats bread when it's still in a raw state. Someone who eats meat from the Zuma Listeron. Rashi points that over here. Zuma listeron is otokaf shebokshkimeta kedeira. It is the spoon by which you mix the pot, and you also use it to take off the scum that's there. One should not be eating the meat out of that ladle. Vashote me'amata ma'im over beta gvarot, and someone drinks from a water channel that goes through a cemetery. That's number 9. Number 10 is mistachel b'fnei amet, someone who looks at the face of a niftar. Some say if you read the inscriptions that are on the grave, that also causes a loss of memory. Again, some Rishonim take these very literally and say that these things cause the problem. There are others who say that there's Kabbalistic issues that are involved over here. Others take it more allegorically and say that each one of these ideas is an allegorical presentation that's telling you or trying to give you a message and not that you take it literally. Tanur Banan. So now we're back to our hierarchy situation here in the Gemara. When the Nasi enters the Beit Midrash into a location, everybody there arises. And they can't sit down until he gives them the instruction, please be seated. The Abetin who is below the Nasi when he comes in, people who are directly aligned where he's walking, they stand up. Not all the rows stand up. Just the two rows that are adjacent to where he's walking, they all stand up until he reaches his location, and then they sit down. Kishachacham nichnas, Tamachachum comes in, echad umei v'echad yoshev, ach yoshev mimkom. In that case, each individual, as he passes by, gets up and then sits down, but there's no permanent standing until he reaches his place. And they don't remain standing. So here it's clearly delineating a hierarchy, which is Nasi, Av Beitin, and then the Chacham. B'nei Chachamim and Tamidei Chachamim, the children of the Chachamim and Tamidei Chachamim, Zman She'arvim Tzrichim Lahem, when the public at large needs them, Mavsin Aroshei Ha'am, they're allowed to walk on the heads of the individuals. Now, this expression is used in the Gemara as well as in the Mishnayot in a number of places. What it seems to be is that the people in general were sitting down on the ground. And then the people who were of stature sat in the front or sat on chairs in the front. Now, if you come in late, then it makes it look like when you have to tiptoe through or walk through the different people, it looks like you're walking on their heads. So it's not literally that they're walking on their heads, but it looks like it. You're inconveniencing people. You have to jump between them to get to your makom. So now, Are you allowed to cause that inconvenience to the people? Normally, you should get there first, so you don't have to walk on their heads. And the Gemara, towards the end of Megillah, there is a list of things that Amoraim did. How did you lengthen your days? One of them is, this Amora says, Lo ifsati aroshayam kodesh. I didn't walk on the people's heads. Not literally, he was walking on their heads, but I didn't come in after them and then have to go through there and walk through them as if I'm stepping on them and causing that inconvenience. But here, if they are somebody that Mizman Sharabim Tzrichim Lam, the Rabim needs them, then they have that right, and they have enough stature that they can walk in and then go to their place, or assume their position, even though the Am is already there. Yotzei Letzorech, Yikanes Vishay Bimkomah. Within that category, if someone has to leave for a necessity, then he can come back to sit in the place where he was originally. Again, if he was there maybe originally, then he wouldn't have to walk over the people. But now he leaves, when he has to return, he can return to his place, which again, in very hierarchical society, where you sat and where your position was very important. So here, to return to your place is important. If you have to stay in the back, that would also be like a slight towards their stature. We have to give some kavod to the people. You can't just walk, quote-unquote, on the people. And therefore, if you left, maybe you shouldn't have the right to go back. So the Gemara says here, if you left for a reason, then you're allowed to come back and sit in your original place. If you read the Gemara Mufshat in its theoretical sense, you would have said that Sorech means any necessity, anything that was really a necessity or necessity of the public at large. But the Gemara continues over here and explains what necessity is. And that narrows the scope of what you would say Sorech is in this case. The children of Tamil Chachamim, whose parents or father are leaders of the community, if they have the capacity to listen and learn, they sit before their parents, with their backs towards the people. I mean, they sit in the front row facing their parents, both because that is a kavod for their parents, as well as the fact that many times we believe the children will assume the positions of their parents, and therefore they need to learn, they need to be acquainted with that which their parents do. Then if they don't have the capacity to learn, here we have our gears as, before their parents, they sit in front of their parents, but facing out towards the Am, meaning that it's more out of respect for their parents, but respect for the Am, they face out towards the Am. If you look in Odei, there's an alternate girsa of Yoshvim, Achorei Aviem. They sit behind their parents, Pneim Klapei Am, and they're facing out towards the Am, which would give them a position, but not a position of learning. They're not facing their father, they're behind the father. So it gives the parent the kavod, but they're not learning, so it doesn't make sense for them to be in between the parents and the Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Afa Beit HaMishteh, even in a place of celebration or a wedding, Osim Otam Snifim. We make the children be sidebars or sidekicks to their parents. You seat the father, or you seat the person who has stature in a certain location, the child gets that same kavod, and he gets to sit next to his father, even though the child himself is not necessarily deserving of that kavod. And Rashi explains that Snifim are things that support the main beam, or things that sit on the main beam. Yeah, they are ancillary. So to over here, these children are ancillary to their parents, so even though they don't have inherent kavod, they get that benefit because of their parents. Amar Mar, Yatzal Tzorech, you go out for a necessity, you come back and sit in your place. Amar Papa, Lo Amar Ela Ktanim. So you see, this is what I said to you before, the Gemara narrows the scope of it and says, that's only when you go out to urinate. Aval Bigdolim, if you went out to defecate, Lo, then you don't get that benefit. That's something you could have anticipated. When it comes to urinating, that's something that happens over time, and it can happen time and time again. It's not something that you control. Even if you relieved yourself before you went in, you still might have to go again once you're in there. On the other hand, when it comes to defecating, that's something that you can take care of at a regular interval and not come in there and then have to leave because you need to defecate. Person should accustom himself to getting up early in the morning and later in the evening to go and defecate. Because in that way, he doesn't have to leave and go far away. Remember, they are defecating out in the fields, out in the open. During the daytime, you're going to have to distance yourself because people can see you. At night, where you have the cover of darkness, then you don't have to go so far. So what he says is, get up early before it's light and then relieve yourself. Go at night when it's dark and relieve yourself, and that way you can do it in closer proximity. You won't have to go out so far and not be visible to other people. But again, it shows this ability to control when you go to the bathroom to relieve yourself when it comes at least to defecating. Amar Rava, Ayin the Chalsha Alma, today where people of a weaker constitution, Afila L'Gdolim Nami. So too, when it comes to defecating, we would say the same thing. Or, you could say here, if a person has a stomach ailment or something where they can't control it, then for sure they would have the right to go out and then return afterward. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Afin Beit Mishteh Oseh Otam Snipim. Even in places of celebration, not where they're asserting or assuming their position of authority, they're given this because of the kavod that they have in other places. It's not where they're acting in the position that gives them that stature. Nevertheless, they're given that kavod, and the children are put as ancillary to their parents. Amarava b'chaye aviyem b'fnei aviyem. That's only true when their father is alive and when their father is present. If their father has passed away already, they're not given that kavod. And if their father's not present, they're also not given that kavod, because they are snifim. They are only an adjunct to the parent, and therefore the parent must be present in order for that to make sense. Otherwise, there's no reason to do it. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel nishneit mishnah zu. This mishnah happened in the time of Shimon Gamliel, the mishnah we just said about the hierarchy about how to stand up. Shimon Gamliel nasi. In that era, Shimon Gamliel was the nasi. Rabbi Meir was the Talmud Chacham, and Rabbi Natan was the Av Beitin. The Av Rabbi Shimon Gamliel hatam habakaimei kulei alma mikamei. When Rabbi Shimon Gamliel came in, everybody used to stand up for him. Also, when Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Meir came in, everyone used to stand up for them. I'm Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Lo bol meve hekera ben dilei ledidhu. Don't we need to have some sort of delineation or separation between my standing and their standing? How is it that the nasi isn't given any more kavod or stature than these other individuals? Takin ha matnita. He established or put in place that braita that we read before, which says for the nasi, everyone stands up and doesn't sit until he says sit. For the abbeitin, the adjacent rows to where he's walking, stand up and remain standing until he reaches the place. Talmud Chacham, you stand up as he passes you. That was to show the hierarchy. Nasi, abbeitin, and Chacham. Ha'oyoma lohava Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Natan Otam. The reason he got that passed and he instituted it was because Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan weren't there that day. So he was able to impose this because they weren't present. The Machar Kiyatu, they show up the next day to the Beit Midrash. Chazu de lo kamu kamayu kederigila milta. People weren't getting up for them like they used to get up for them. They walk in, not everybody's getting up for them anymore. Amrei mai hai, what's going on here? What's changed? Amru lehu achitokin Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Ah, you missed it yesterday. That's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel put in place yesterday. Amrei Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Natan. I'm a Talmud Chacham. You're an Abbeitin. Nitkan milta kedelidan. Let us make something up for ourselves. You can tell that the Rashi doesn't know how to translate it because he brings three or four different ways to explain this, which means that he's having difficulty trying to figure out what it is. So he does first, Klomar, nitkan milta kedelidan. Let us do something for ourselves like he did to us. So the way he did to us, we're going to return the favor. That's one way to explain it. V'itagar say natkin. Natkin milta dahave zikaron le'olam le'dorot. Afilu ke'enan be'olam. Let us establish something here that will have longevity to it. Let us do something that will have impact over here. V'itamre natkin milta ke'litne lomar lo shilam denu devar. Let us do something that will force him to teach and he will be embarrassed. And that's based on the next line of the Gemara. My Navile, what should we do? Namele gale uksin delele. Have him teach Masechet Uksin, which is the last Masechet in Shas, because we know he doesn't know it. And then he'll realize his error because he's going to be embarrassed by the fact he doesn't know it. Gaiman delo gomar. Namele, when he's unable to teach it, we're going to say to him, Mi yamalel gvrot Hashem, yashmiya kol tehilato. Lamina el malel gvrot Hashem. Who is it proper or appropriate to speak about the wonders of Hashem, or the greatness of Hashem? That's someone who can tell all of his praises, not someone who doesn't know everything. It's interesting, the Gemara uses this in Megillah and Brachot to teach that you're not allowed to make up your own tefillah and to praise Hashem. Because, mi amalel grot Hashem, who's the one who's allowed to speak about the greatness of Hashem? There's only someone who can say all of the things of Hashem. And the Gemara says, Adgan siyamto l'shvachei. How do you ever end the praise of Hashem? There's no way to end the praise of Hashem, and therefore we have to use certain, what we call canned expressions of praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Either things that are found in the Torah, or things that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah established that are appropriate. So over here too, they're saying, how can you give yourself such kavod if you don't know everything? So Navre, and then they will remove him. Vava'ana Av Beit Din, and then I'll become the Av Beit Din, Va'at Nasi, and then you'll be the Nasi. Shem'inu Rabbi Yaakov ben Karshe, Rabbi Yaakov ben Arshi overhears them hatching this plan. Amar Dil V'chas V'shalom Achim Milta L'dei Kisufa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. They might have really embarrassed Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and that's not a good thing. Azo Yatav Achorei Ilatei, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So he went and he sat behind the room or the study of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Pashat set up shop over there. Garas Vitana, Garas Vitana. He was learning and going over. Learning and going over Masechet Uksin. Amar, my dekamo. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is hearing in the background this going on and on and on and on. And he says, what do we have over here? Dilma chas v'shalom ika be midrash shamide. Maybe something's going on in the Beit Midrash in this Masechet. Yaib date v'garsa. So then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel chazered over Uksin to be sure that he was ready. V'machar hamulei, neiti marv nitnei b'uksin. So the next day, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nathan say to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, why don't you teach everybody here Uksin, assuming that he's not going to know it. Potach v'amar. He knew it because he had reviewed it the night before, and he was able to teach it. Butter to Ukim, after he got up, I mean after he finished, amar lehu, ilo gamrinan kisipitinan. Had I not reviewed it last night and learned it, you would have embarrassed me. Paki, he gave the command, Bafkinum and Beit Midrash. They threw them out of the Beit Midrash. They threw Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Notan out of the Beit Midrash. Habukatve kushiyatu abhipitko. They used to write their questions on little pieces of paper. Bishadu hatam and throw them into Beit Midrash. Dava mifrak mifrak. Those that they could answer in the Beit Midrash, they answered. Dalo avim mifrak. Those that they couldn't answer. Katve piro kushadu. Then Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nathan write the answers and throw it into the Beit Midrash. So there's a communication, but they're basically, in a sense, excommunicated, pushed out of the Beit Midrash. Amalo Rabbi Yossi, Torah mi bachutz, banu mi bifnim. How could it be that the Torah is outside and we're learning inside? It's clear that Rabbi Nathan and Rabbi Meir are essential to the Torah learning over here. How could it be that we're keeping them out of the Beit Midrash? Amalo Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Nalinu. Okay, I acquiesce to bring them back into the Beit Midrash. Mio nik nesinu. We're going to penalize them. The low name root shmaita mishmaihu. We're never going to say over their memrot in their own name. Asiku the Rabbi Meir acherim. They gave euphemistic term for Rabbi Meir throughout the Mishnayot, and he's called acherim. The Rabbi Natan yesh omrim. And in the Mishnah, when it says yesh omrim, that's a reference to Rabbi Natan. So now here, there's a number of things to discuss. First of all, why do they say it in plural and not in the singular? That might be because if you said it in the singular, that would prompt someone to ask, well, who is that acher that is speaking? Who is that yesh omer that is speaking? When you speak in the plural, you just assume acherim means the chachamim or yesh omrim. And that will serve the purpose of causing the forgetting of their name in their shmuot. That's number one. Number two is possibly that Acher was a name that was already taken up by Elisha ben Abuya, and so they didn't want to confuse Rabbi Meir with Elisha ben Abuya, and therefore Acherim was used, and therefore for Rabbi Nathan they also used Yesh Omrim. In addition, Tosafot pointed this out in the Gemara earlier in Avodah Zarah, that sometimes you find Rabbi Meir's opinion found in a Mishnah or Braita, and there is Acherim in that Mishnah or Braita. How could it be that Acherim and Rabbi Meir are found in the same Mishnah or Braita? Some answer, that was Rabbi Meir before the Knas, and that's Rabbi Meir after the Knas. That was his opinion before he was penalized. That's Rabbi Meir after he was penalized. Although the Baal Yatosfot simply say that in some places there really were Acherim Omrim. There are others that said. And when you find Rabbi Meir in a Mishnah or Rabbi Natan in a Mishnah, that means they're not the Acherim. They're not the Yesh Omrim in that case. But in general, if you have no other attribution to them in that work, then you can assume that the Acherim and Yeshomim mean that. But if they're found in that context, then it doesn't mean that. So it means it's not an exclusive term that's used by them. But in general, that is the terminology that you would assume, or the default you would assume in these cases. In addition to that, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's actions are somewhat self-serving because he's trying to elevate his position as the Nasi. So many point out that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, from other stories in Shas, was a big Anav. And despite the fact that he's a big Anav, he did this, because he felt it was important for establishing the power of the Nasi for Kvoda Torah, and that the Nasi needed to have the quote-unquote yeshiva be under his auspices, because that would bring the political leadership and Torah leadership under one person, and that would be important because people, if you separate out the political and the learning side of it, people would then think of the Nasi as a political leader and maybe only deal with the Nasi in a political sense, but not connect between the Nisiyut in the political sense and the Torah sense. And so he wanted to combine them and make sure that that had a significant position that would not be undermined by anybody else or any other authority. And so thereby he establishes this. We're going to see in a second that this seems to be Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the father of Rabbi. So that means that his father was Rabban Gamliel. We have a number of Rabban Gamliels in the Mishnayot, a number of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliels, because they alternated generations between Shimon and Gamliel in the house of the Nasi in Beit Rabbi. So, but Rabbi is the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and we'll see in a second he also has a son that he named after his father, Shimon. Here we see that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has appeared with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Natan, who are Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And if you remember, in the previous generation, you had a similar issue with his father, Rabban Gamliel. And that is that they had the altercation between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua, where Rabbi Gamliel tries to impose his opinion on Rabbi Yoshua, and then many times mistreats Rabbi Yoshua, and is deposed by the Chachamim because of his mistreatment of Rabbi Yoshua. But you see, in the previous generation, Rabbi Gamliel also was trying to establish the authority of the Nasi, and that Rabbi Gamliel was a peer with Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, who are the Rebbeim of Rabbi Meir. So you're likely talking about Rabbi Gamliel, his father, then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and then Rabbi. So that's probably who we are speaking about over here. But it's just interesting to note that idea that Rabbi Gamliel, his father, also tried to assert the power. Here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel did it in a more subtle manner, which was more palatable and acceptable to the Chachamim, not to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Natan, but to the Yeshiva in general. They did accept his authority, and thereby he established this idea of strengthening the position of the Nasi. Achvolu b'chalmayu, they saw in a dream, zilu paisul Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, they should appease and apologize to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Natan azal, Rabbi Natan went ahead and did that. Rabbi Meir lo azal, Rabbi Meir refused to go. Amar tibei cholomot lo malin v'lo moridin. Can't take dreams seriously. Dreams are not necessarily true. You don't know if what they're saying is real. And therefore he ignored or opted not to pay heed to the dream, and he never went to apologize. Obviously, he was majorly affronted by what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had done. Kiyazo Rabbi Natan, when Rabbi Natan came to apologize before Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Nehi Dehani Lach Kimra Davuch, Lamavi Abbeitin, even though your father's, you can either say your Kimra is a hat, or his belt is what gave you the right to be the Abbeitin, Shabinach Nami Nasi, you think it gives you the authority and the ability to be a Nasi? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is chastising Rabbi Natan and saying, listen, first of all, you're not such a big gun yourself. You got the position of Abbeitin because your father's authority, or your father being the Abbeitin. So even though there might have been Chachamim that were greater than you, you assumed the position of Abbeitin because of your father. So why are you questioning my authority as the Nasi, which I got from my father? You got the same thing. That's the same day you came into that position. Or it could be that he's pointing out to him that you got that position because of your father, but your father is still not from the Davidic line or from the line of Nassim, so you think you can elevate yourself to a Nasi? Although Rabbi Natan might actually be Rabbi Natan of Bavli, who was a child of the Reish Gola in Bavel, which would have meant that he was part of the Davidic line, and that's why Rabbi Meir suggested that he take over as the Nasi, because we said before, Lo Yasur Shevet Miyudah Mechukek Meben Maglav, those are the Rashi Gola in Bavel and the Nisim in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why Rabbi Natan was the one who was going to be the Nasi in place of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. In that case, he can't be criticizing him about the fact that he doesn't have the familial descent to be the Nasi, because he was from the family of the Reish Gola. Either way, it was a criticism of his thinking that he could upgrade himself from the Abbeitin to be the Nasi. Okay, we're going to end here on the last line of Yudim Amud Bet. Okay, we're going to start here on the last line of Yudimol Amud Bet. Matnele Rabbi the Rabbi Shimon Bray. Now we pull over to another story, but the story in the end will connect back to this, which is, Rabbi was teaching his son Rabbi Shimon. As I noted before, Rabbi's son Rabbi Shimon is named after his father, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Acherim Omrim, others say, Ilu haya tmura, lo haya karev. If it really was tmura, it wouldn't have been brought on the mizbeach. The Mishnah is a Mishnah that deals with maaser behema. Get this again when we get there in Kodoshim in Masechet Bechorot, which is that when it comes to maaser behema, if a person makes a mistake, there's a possibility that he can make the ninth animal that is exiting, the tenth animal, and the 11th animal that are exiting, he can make them all kadosh. And that's partly because of Zeret HaKadosh, partly because of other problems by Kodoshim, but there's a possibility that you can make the ninth, tenth, and 11th animal kadosh. What Rabbi Meir says over here is a response to a position of Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah says that the 11th animal is put on the Mizbeach as a Shlamim, and it makes Tmura. That if you try to exchange it with another animal, it'll make that other animal Kadosh. That is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says, Chil yesh Tmura sit Tmura. You can't have a derivative of Tmura. If you exchange an animal for another animal, and that's how it became Kadosh, you can't then go and exchange that animal to something else and make another animal Kadosh. There's no Tmura to Tmura. Implied in Rabbi Yehuda's statement is that the 11th animal is kadosh because of tmura. Rabbi Meir answers him and says, if you are really right that the 11th animal is tmura, then you wouldn't be able to put it on the Mizbeach as a shlamim. So I'm right because the fact that it goes on the Mizbeach proves to you that it is not tmura. And that's the statement, the clip that we got from the Mishnah, which Rabbi Meir says, HaKayim Ramim, Eliyat Tmura, Lo Yat Karei. If you're right that the 11th animal is kadosh because of tmura, it wouldn't end up in the mizbeach as a shlamim. Amalo, Hashem says that mimei alalu shememeim anu shutim. We drink from their waters from Torah. Ushmotam einam mazkirim. We don't mention their names. Amale, bnei adam shebikshu lakor kvodcha, kvod beit avicha. These are people who tried to uproot your honor and the honor of your forefathers, meaning that they would have usurped the power of the Nasi, and you would no longer be in the lineage of the Nasi. Amarle, very interesting discourse between Rabbi and his son. Rabbi Shimon says to his father, Rabbi, Gam ahavatam, gam sinatam, gam kinatam, kvar avado. But all their love, all their hatred, and all their jealousy, kvar avado is already lost. Let bygones be bygones. Why are you holding a grudge against these people? They were not successful in the end, so let it go. Amarle, Rabbi responds to him. It's interesting, first of all, how they speak. They speak through allegories through psukim, but the fact that Rabbi Shimon is questioning his father in this manner, even though the enemy has ended, their swords last forever. Meaning their piercings or what they try to do is everlasting. The Rashi seems to explain it slightly differently, which is that even though they are gone, that you have to hold your swords against them forever. Meaning that you do bear a grudge against these individuals, even though the individuals have already been gone, although from the remainder of the discourse between them, it seems like the first interpretation of the Ramah makes more sense. And it might have even been an anticipation of what his son was going to say, that Rabbi said, they tried to be pugeya b'kvodcha u'kvod beit avicha, which means that even if you're willing to be mochel on your kavod, you don't necessarily have the right to be mochel on the kavod of your ancestors. Amalei, hani milehechi danu masayu. That's true when they were successful. Yes, they might die, but what they did will last forever. But that's only when they were successful at what they did. Over here, rabbanu hanu masayu. They were caught before it happened, and they were not successful. So why are we still holding a grudge? Hadar adni le, listen to this. Rabbi went back and retaught him the Mishnah. Amru mishum Rabbi Meir. They say over in the name of Rabbi Meir, ilu ayat mura lo ayat karev. Rabbi accepts the criticism of his son and acknowledges that maybe this is too much, that we're holding a grudge. You see here that the Gemara points out, Amarava filu Rabbi dan bantanutahu. Even Rabbi, who's known as one of the greatest anavim, that's one of the character traits of Rabbi that are mentioned in the Mishnah Navot, as well as in the Gemara at the end of Ketubot, Tana Amru Mishum Rabbi Meir. When he taught his son, he says, they say in the name of Rabbi Meir, Amar Rabbi Meir, lo Amar. He does not say Amar Rabbi Meir. He still can't say it directly in the name of Rabbi Meir. He says they say over in the name of Rabbi Meir. So you see here that Rabbi acquiesced to his son's criticism not to hold a grudge. But even with all that, he still could not bring himself to totally erase that which happened. So now you could look at this in one of two ways. You could look at that as a criticism in some way of Rabbi, or showing you the power of that type of grudge or that type of issue where you're trying to displace someone's kavod and their honor, that even Rabbi was an anav still couldn't bring himself to say, I'm a Rabbi Meir, because of that previous incident. So that could be a veiled criticism. Or on the other hand, you could say that Rabbi did a balancing act over here. He acquiesced to his son that you can't hold grudges forever. On the other hand, he still wanted to give a siman that there was something wrong here, and that Rabbi Meir was penalized for his behavior in this situation. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Pligi ba Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Rabbanan. Shimon Gamliel, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that we saw before in the Rabbanan. Chadamar Sinai Adif. One of them says that the person with larger bikiyut, or the beggar baki and bikiyut, is better. And Kisinai is that it's clear to him, or he has it as if it was given to him from Sinai, but he has a clarity and a scope of knowledge as if he was standing at Sinai and received it in that manner. But he is lacking in his ability to be Oker Harim, which is that he is unable to then either answer issues that come up between the items, to be Mefalpel in items, or maybe even be Mevin, Davar, Mitach, Davar, extrapolate concepts. His reliance is more on his scope of knowledge rather than the depth or capacity to question. Kadamar Oker Harim Adif. The other one who says the one who can ask questions and grind things up and uproot mountains, they are better. Now, again, this might be a veiled reference to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel versus Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is known as a tremendous Oker Harim. The Gemara in other places knows for us that the Chavirim, so Rabbi Meir, could never figure out what he was saying. He was so smart and so erudite that when he stated an opinion, nobody could argue on him. And that's why we can't pass an halacha like him, because nobody can challenge him because he was so great. So Rabbi Meir was a Oker Harim. And maybe Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was a Sinai. Given that, maybe that gives the difference in their opinion. Although the Gemara never identifies which opinion belongs to whom. But nevertheless, you could argue that that's why the Gemara is bringing it over here. Or it might be because the Gemara ends off like this in a number of Masechtot. It's more of a general theme about learning. Is it better to have the swath of Mishnayot known to you? Meaning that you have all that bikiyut. And once you have that bikiyut, then you can move on. Or is it better to have someone who's sharp and question and help you get to the right place? Rabbi Yosef Sinai. The Gemara brings an example. It's a Gemara that's identical to the Gemara at the end of Brachot. Rabbi Yosef was the one who was a Sinai. He knew all the Mishnayot. Rabba, his contemporary, was an Oker Harim. Shachul Taman. They sent over there. They're in Bavel. They sent over to Eretz Yisrael, Ezev and Kodem. They were now going to have to assign one of them to be the Rosh Hashiva. They wanted to know, should it be Rabba or Rabbi Yosef? Shalchulu Sinai Adif. From Eretz Yisrael, they sent back that the Sinai is Adif. Damar Mar, Kol Tzrichim Namare Chitayo. Everybody needs the owner of the silo. Which means, in the end, this is something that's very unique to their time. When you're talking about Torah Shebaal Peh, everybody needs the person who has all of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Otherwise, you will never have a Mesorah, you'll never be able to learn. An Oker Harim can do things in a local sense, but he's missing parts of the Torah. The Sinai is something that everybody needs because he's the one who can give you all the memory, can give you all the information. And therefore, he takes precedence over the Oker Harim. And the Oker Harim is much more of a Chachan, someone who is Mechadesh, but there is a risk in the Oker Harim. Both his lack of the scope of knowledge of everything that's there, as well as his reliance on logic, mean that there is fallibility to that which he does. And therefore, we give precedence to the Sinai. Despite the fact that he was given the right to be the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yosef demurred to Rabba. The Gemara in Brachot adds on a little extra to the story, which is that this astrologer had told him that after he rises to come to power, that he's going to die very shortly afterwards. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef was choshesh for that Kaldai that gave him that information, and therefore he didn't want to accept the power or leadership position. That's absent in the Gemara here. Malach Rabba Asrim Betartin Shnit. Rabba ruled, or was the Rosh Hashiva, for 22 years in Pumpadita. Father Malach Rabbi Yosef. Only after those 22 years, then Rabbi Yosef came to be the Rosh Hashiva. V'chol Shanei the Malach Rabba. All the years that Rabba was the Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Yosef filu umna lebeite lo chalif. Rabbi Yosef, and here Rashi brings two possible interpretations, he never brought a blood letter to his house. Either that's because the Rosh Hashiva got the kavod of the blood letter coming to his house. So Rabbi Yosef didn't want to act like a Rosh Hashiva, so he didn't let the blood letter come to his house. He would go to Rabba's house to have the blood letter working on him over there. Or Rashi brings another interpretation, which is that he had no free time. He was Osek in Torah all those years that he would have been the Rosh Hashiva, and he had no free time to have a blood letter come over to his house. That's another explanation. Or There's a third possibility, which is he never fell ill during that period of time. He never needed the blood letter to come to his house because he was healthy all those years. Because we know after he took power, he dies 2 years later, like the prediction of the Koldai. The Gemara in Brachot says, Kol adochek et hashah, anyone who pushes time, time pushes him. Kol she hashah dochalko, anybody who lets time push him around, he's dochek et hashah. And this is the example. Rav Yosef, who bid his time until he became Rosh Yeshiva, lived an additional 22 years. Had he become Rosh Yeshiva right away, he would have died 2 years later. The fact that he waited gave him an additional 22 years. That's the conclusion of the Gemara in Brachot. Now, this is in Pupadita. Abaye Verova, Rabbi Zeira, Rabbi Bar Matna, Rabbi Yatve, they're all sitting around, Rabbi Tzricha Reisha. They had to decide amongst them who's going to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Abaye and Rova are the next generation. Abaye is the Talmud of Rabbi Yosef and Rava, and Rova is also a Talmud of Rava, Talmud Mupok of Rav Nachman, and here they're trying to figure out who's going to be the Rosh Yeshiva in Pupadita after the passing of Rabbi Yosef. Amri, kol demar milta v'lo mafrich, lavi reisha. Anybody who says over a memra that nobody can ask a question on it, nobody can upend, they'll become the Rosh Yeshiva. The kol ifrich, all of them put forth an idea or a concept that was undermined. Dabaye lo ifrich. Dabaye's statement or whatever he put forth was not undermined by the others. Chazia Rava, it's probably not Rava because Rava had already passed away. It's Chazia Rova l'Abaye, the Gava reisha. Amalei, Nachmani, Ptach Ve'ema. Go and start darshaning in public. Although the Rama lowers the stakes over here and says it wasn't a question about who's going to be Rosh Yeshiva. Rather, who's going to be the head of the Chabura of their learning? Who is going to be the lead party here deciding what they learn and presenting the learning to the others? Then that would also allow the Girsa to remain over here, Rabba, because it means that his Rebbe was still alive and he was giving permission to become the head of the group. So Chazio Rova, the Abaye, the Gova Reisha, that he saw that he had, Rashi says, Haramata Rosh, that his head was elevated, and the Toswara Rosh adds in, Batzalat Panim, that his face began to radiate, meaning that he saw the success of the position that he had given out that nobody could question. Either that could be a negative statement, which is, he saw that Abaye was getting a little bit haughty, or feeling a little bit good about what he did, and therefore the next statement of Rova, where he calls him Amalei Nachmani, is to put him back in his place and say, listen, you're still Nachmani, and the fact that you were Zocha to be the Rosh Yeshiva, that's been a Shamayim, that's not necessarily because of your Zkut. Or on the other hand, it could have been a positive statement, which is Chazir Rav Labai, the Gova Reisha, that he was being elevated min HaShamayim. He saw this as a Siman min HaShamayim. Even though they were peers, or even though maybe Rav was greater than Abaye, at this point, the Siyata Deshmai had it that Abaye was the one who was chosen and elevated to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And that's a Siman min HaShamayim. That's who they wanted to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And then when Rava calls him afterwards, Amalei Nachmani, that's because they were peers. And that's what Rava called him all the time, Nachmani. But he invites him to be the Rosh Yeshiva and to speak up and say, because he saw that Sha'a Mesecheket Lo, the time had come for him and min HaShamayim, they wanted him to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Although if you look in the Tosfot Rosh, he quotes from Perish of Haigon, the Abaye Nachmani Shemo. That Abaye's name was Nachmani, Mufashim Bekama Duchte Begemara. And they explain that in many places in the Gemara. V'nakte Rabbonon, the Baruchi, the Rabba Bar Nachmani Hava. Because he was the nephew of Rabba Bar Nachmani, Bitalmido. Abaye grew up in Rabba's house. His parents passed away when he was very young. But he was also the nephew of Rabba Bar Nachmani. And Abaye had the same name as Rabba's father, Nachmani. Rabba, whose father was around all those years, didn't want to call Abaye by his first name, Nachmani, because that would be a front when he's using his father's name to call Abaye. And therefore, Abakarle Abaye b'lashon Arami. He used to call him Abaye in Aramaic, Kadam Shukure Avi. Like a person who calls him my father. Because Nachmani was the name of his father, and he said Abaye like Avi, my father, because he carried the same name. Now that he was calling him his father, but your name is like my father's name, but his real name was Nachmani. And since he was amongst the greatest of the Talmidei Chachamim, the name stuck, even though it was a name that was given by Rabba in a particular circumstance, it stuck with him, like this terminology of Rav and Rabbi. Av, Avaye, which was Av, also stuck with him because of his stature. And that's how they explain it, and that's why Rav over here calls him Nachmani, because that is his real name. His name of Abaye really was from Rabba, and that name stuck, but people who knew him and were his peers called him Nachmani, like his real name. Abaye becomes Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedita. After the passing of Abaye in Pumbedita, Rav moves the yeshiva over to Mechuza, and then he becomes the Rosh Hashiva in Mechuza. Yibailu, Rabbi Zeira, Rabba Bar Matno. So you have a similar genre of question. You have Rabbi Zeira and Rabba Bar Matno. Hey, minayu adif. Which one of them is greater? Rabbi Zeira, Kharif, Umakshe. Rabbi Zeira is sharp as a whip. He can ask questions, he questions quickly, he answers quickly, he's all over things. Rabbi Bar Matno, Matun Umesid. He is someone who is slow, but thorough in his approach to things. Which one is greater? Rashi over here says, we're trying to get to the halacha. How do you get to the proper halacha? Both of these are valid ways to get to the halacha. Rabbi Zeira is helpful because he's sharp. He asks these really good questions, which forces you to answer, and then he goes around quickly asking and answering, and through that mechanism, you're able to get to the truth or to the right halacha. Now then, Rabbi Matno doesn't do things as quickly. He's not as sharp, but he's very patient and thorough in what he does. And in that patience and thoroughness, he ends up with the right answer coming out of Liva the Hilchotah. So which is a better approach to get to the halachic outcome or the proper halachic outcome? My, which one takes precedence? Teiku. Gemara here leaves that as unresolved. I think the Gemara wanted to head off on something like that where it's unresolved. In an Elu Melu Divrei Elukim Chayim. That these are both valid ways to deal with things. And different people take different routes to get to the same conclusion or the proper conclusion. And with that, we end Masechet Horiot, as well as Seder Nezikin. Hadron Alach Kohen Mashiach, Uslik Alah Masechet Horiot.